Welcome to the Go Ask Something podcast, where education and technology meet. On today's episode, I'm going to talk about a recent phone call that I had with a college student studying cybersecurity and what advice I gave him. I'm your host, Will Bushy, author of Wired for Coding, and my co-host, Ross Wickman. He's busy behind the scenes, but he'll join us in a future episode. Before we get into today's topic, I wanted to give you a quick update on our Hack Sioux Falls project. We started that about 3 or 4 weeks ago. We had 15 students sign up, and this time we're doing it a little bit different. We're building a specific project. So the first Hack Sioux Falls that we did, kind of left it open-ended and let the kids pick what projects they wanted to do. And that just got a little bit out of control, and some of the kids had a hard time finding projects, and it just turned into kind of a lot of work for me. So this time we're building a tamper-proof Christmas present. Got some electronic circuits, a little Arduino Nano, we got some sensors, and a buzzer. And the kids are going to be able to build a little project to see if somebody opened the Christmas present prematurely. And then they can send an alarm or just set off some LED lights. And the last couple weeks, we've been getting together and just kind of working through some of the initial electronics and testing out each of the components that are as part of the kit. So anyway, the project's going pretty well. The kids are having a good time. Next weekend, we're going to do a soldering workshop. I've got some little 3D Christmas trees that I bought as kits from China, and they're going to solder them together. Last time, the soldering project was a lot of fun. The project was quite simple, but the kids really, really enjoyed it. So I think we're going to have a great time here this weekend as well. So back on today's main topic. Earlier this week, I had a conversation with a college student who's in a cybersecurity field, and he was just real curious about kind of talking a little bit about somebody that has experience in the area and maybe could offer some advice and guidance for what he should be doing now while he's in college so that he can excel when he gets out and starts his first job. So I know his father, and his father wanted me to just reach out to him and have a quick conversation with him. I guess they had been talking quite a bit and maybe still some uncertainty on whether or not cybersecurity was a good field for him to go down. He previously was in college for a completely different discipline and switched over, I think it was about a year ago. So it's all a little bit new to him. He definitely didn't start down this path on his college career. But now that he's into cybersecurity, he says he's really having a good time. He's really understanding what's going on, and he's really liking it a lot more than the previous discipline that he was in. So we had about a 45-minute phone call or so. I was in the process of driving back from one of my other meetings, and I just gave him a quick call, and we ended up talking for quite some time. You know, the big thing, and this is nothing to do specifically with him, but I think pretty much any college student, especially in a tech field, you know, is just really questioning whether or not what they're teaching in the school is applicable in the real world. And of course, the short answer is yes, of course it is. I mean, there wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to be teaching things that are completely irrelevant. But, you know, on the same token, you do have to take into consideration that cyber and tech and pretty much any of these fields that are very bleeding edge are going to be changing all the time. And how often can the schools change the curriculum in order to keep up with the times? And they do a pretty decent job. You know, and I mean, you're never going to be perfect. And the big thing about it is just kind of getting a lot of that core fundamentals understanding down, because, you know, it is such a big field. And, you know, if you can understand how, especially in cybersecurity, if you're dealing with the security side on what makes a good vulnerability, or how do you find vulnerabilities, or how do you secure networks so that you don't have vulnerabilities, a lot of that, you know, there's just a lot of base understanding that goes into play. Now, of course, when you get out into industry, depending on your specific area of focus, there's going to be a lot of custom knowledge that you're going to develop over time. And it's only going to come over time, either with your own personal experience or with what your employer can provide you through on-the-job training, working with coworkers, and so on. So this school that he goes to has a huge focus around Cisco, and Cisco donated a lot of technology, and they have a lot of influence over the curriculum and the types of things that are being taught in the security and the networking side. You know, I think that's great that we've got businesses like Cisco that can step up, and they've got the funds, they've got the money, they've got the desire and the need in order to help universities and colleges be able to better train students for that real world state of the art technology. You know, and I know that you're getting a little bit of a skewed view of things. You're going to be looking more of how Cisco handles things or how Cisco might do things. But, you know, in all honesty, I think having that is far better than not having it. being able to access state-of-the-art technology, you know, just really trumps the fact that it may be one specific brand and that they may be training kids to be Cisco certified. But, you know, once you get out into the real world, there's all kinds of possibilities that you can do, and there's all kinds of ways that you can come up to speed with other equipment and other hardware and software. You know, the other interesting thing is just pushing on the security side. And this is one of the questions that the college student asked me was, you know, what's the value of some of these certifications? Now, it varies, obviously, from field to field, but you know, one of the things in networking and network security is they do put a lot of emphasis on their certifications. That's not always true in all of the industries, but I definitely think that if you're going to be in one of these cyber networking degrees, the better and the more certifications that you can get, the better off you're going to be when you get that first job. But I know they're expensive, and you kind of have to weigh that with, you know, is the value going to be there if I take the certification at that particular cost, or is it something that you should wait and see if your employer might pick up, or maybe even just wait to see if that's even a certification that's got value. You know, unfortunately, the answer to that question is going to vary based on everything in your career and the path that you're going down. But it's definitely something that, you know, with certifications, you're going to be able to probably get into some interviews that you wouldn't otherwise be able to. One of the topics that we spent a lot of time talking about was just how does curriculum within a university differ and vary based on what you're going to see in the real world? You know, that's a really tough one. You know, for one, I don't do a lot in the cybersecurity field itself, so I can't speak too highly around what is the state of the art. Now, what I do with security and networking on day-to-day basis, I'm always amazed that, you know, when I do get in there, how much has changed since the last time I was in there. But, you know, it is one of the things that we're always struggling with. And my advice to him, and this is my advice to pretty much everybody in any one of these tech fields, is you can't rely solely based on what you're being taught at school. You have to go out and you have to be able to do your own research. You have to be able to do your own learning. You have to be able to understand and figure things out on your own. And the sooner you do that, the better off you're going to be, the more experience you're going to have, but also you're going to understand how you can go do this research in the future. So I did ask him quite a few times about just, hey, what do you think you want to do when you graduate? Now, he's still a little bit early in his education career, so he hadn't put a lot of thought into it, but he was kind of leaning towards being more on the pen testing side, which is, you know, penetration testing or those that check and secure networks, mostly from the outside or with the consent of the business owner or the person owning the technology or code. And pen testing can be both from a hardening standpoint of the network, but also it could be something where you're doing software pen testing or app pen testing, where you're checking to see if the program itself or the app can be broken or compromised, or is there some of it even gets down into the code where you'll hire a firm to go in and essentially look through every single line of code to see if you've done anything that may be a security compromise. And these can be very complicated projects. They are very, very skilled individuals that end up running these pen tests. You know, when you do a pen test at the back end, usually there's some type of a report and certification that you're providing. Now, there's no guarantees, obviously, because they're just what they found and what they looked at the time. And of course, the original author or owner of the network has to continue to maintain the same level of security that was taking place when the pen test occurred. But anyway, pen testing is kind of an interesting field. I think it takes a very specific skill set in order to kind of think about that. But, you know, other potential career fields in the cybersecurity, you know, right now we're seeing here in Sioux Falls a lot more networking type positions and roles coming in and bringing a lot more of that security in, just with the different security breaches that we continually see at a national level. I mean, it's got everybody on edge to making sure that their networks are at least as secure as they possibly can, given what the back end is doing and kind of what that vulnerability and that risk is. So one of the things that I did was just give him some different advice throughout the conversation, and I thought I would just share some of that with you here today as well. And the first one was, we talked a little bit about internships because he has not done an internship. This was something that he was recently talking to the administration that handles that at the university about. And so he was real curious, you know, what my opinions were on paid internships, unpaid internships. How do you find a good internship? You know, and this is probably one of the best things that you can do in your when you're getting any type of a technical career and any type of a technical degree, is to get a good internship. Now, there's a lot of internships. But when I say good internship, you know, this has to be something that provides you value and also provides the employer value. You know, I've seen a lot of internships where the employer just sees this as, hey, I can get a younger student come in and work for nothing or next to nothing for a summer, and look at all the advantage that I'm going to get. But the reality is, if they don't have a process or a program that they want you to work on, it's probably just going to be a waste of both of your time. What's going to happen, because you don't have that real-world experience, you're not going to be able to start contributing on day one. So now you're going to be pulling the other engineer off of whatever it is they're doing to show you how to do whatever this project is. And that's going to get frustrating for them, and it's going to get frustrating for whomever is the manager there, because now other work that should be getting done isn't getting done. And, you know, as the college student, you may be frustrated as well because you're not learning anything. You know, you're just being pulled back and forth, and before you know it, the whatever it was you were working on is over your head and somebody else is doing it, and you're just told to, you know, go sweep up or something. The other thing that I see a lot of is the internships where they'll come in and they'll kind of just do remedial work. You see this in the programming side, computer science side a lot, where the intern will do unit testing or write documentation. Well, you're not going to learn the same. I mean, you're going to learn stuff, of course, but you're not going to learn the same by just doing those types of roles versus somebody that's jumping in and integrating and understanding the system that you're working on. But, you know, look at it from the employer's perspective as well. You know, that's a tough proposition. You've got to have training, and in some cases, it may take 6 to 8 months to even train a new developer, and you now have to cram an internship within a 6 to 12 week program. So, you know, it is very tough to have good programs, but businesses that are very serious about it and take their interns seriously and want to hire good college graduates put the time and effort in order to create good internship programs. And so my advice was to track those down and to specifically look for businesses that have a good track record of having well-run internships, both from an internship organizational perspective, but also after the internship. What is their plan? Is their plan for you to just go back to college and never hear from you again? Or is the plan to maybe bring you on part-time or hire you after graduation and to stay in touch with you? Now, it can be hard to find a good internship program. Usually the good ones people know about. Talk to your professors, talk to your to the people in the administrations, who are the businesses that are involved in the schools. Go to your job fairs, talk to the businesses that are there, ask them how engaged they are. If all of a sudden you see a business at that job fair looking for interns and you've never seen them on campus and you've never heard of them before, there's a good chance that they're just trying to find some new employees. Maybe they think this is a cheaper way to go about it. You know, the other thing that I'm really opposed to is the free internships. You know, I realize you can get some experience there, and you know, under certain circumstances, it probably would make sense. But you know, in general, I don't think it's a good idea to do a free internship without any money on the line. You know, what's going to ultimately happen is you're going to run into situations where, you know, the employee is going to say, "Well, yeah, I'm going to take next week off just because I'm not getting paid anyway." Well, now all of a sudden you're not getting the same experience from an employer's perspective, because your employee's not showing up because you're not paying them. The employee may not really feel that motivated to do work in the first place. So, you know, while I know it can be expensive to hire an intern, on the same token, if you're not willing to put money into it, it's probably not going to end well, and it probably is just not worth doing in the first place. So anyway, those are my thoughts on internships. Another area that we talked quite a bit about was just getting involved in the local community around of networking, security, and cyber. And again, this varies a lot by your community. You know, does your university have security clubs or networking clubs or just clubs in general, having something to do with the degrees that are being offered? And if not, you know, is this something that you could start? Are there any clubs that the maybe local businesses are hosting? In the cyber world, I'm not as familiar as I am in the programming side, but you know, we do have Cyber Patriot as a national program by the Air Force, and I know there's different clubs around the country. You may or may not have one in your area. That may be something that you even want to start if there isn't one. And what Cyber Patriot is we did a camp earlier this summer, but it's geared a little bit more towards middle school and high school students. And what they're trying to do is teach them some basic cybersecurity while they're still in high school and in middle school, so they can quite kind of understand what this means to be in the field. Now, they're not going to dive super deep into cyber. You know, they're going to learn a lot about passwords and procedures and policies and creating users, setting up and securing a local virtual machine, you know, things like that. Things that a first, second year computer science or cybersecurity student should easily be able to understand. So you may think that you don't have that experience in order to give back or to mentor as part of a Cyber Patriot program, but honestly, you really do. Given the fact that they're high school and middle school kids. So that would be one area to stick around and to check. And there's going to be a handful of others. Like I said, it's going to vary a little bit by your region and what the local cyber employees are doing in your area. So take a look around, maybe ask around your school, see if there's any clubs, and don't hesitate to start one if there isn't one. And there's all kinds of material online to be able to kind of bootstrap putting together a club, especially in the cybersecurity world. So one of the things that I talk a lot about in my book, Wired for Coding, is building a business or work portfolio. Now, in the computer science world, that's not quite as hard because it's just software. You can build websites or apps or build some back-end widgets. But in the cybersecurity field, it's a little bit harder to just build something. And my advice here is that instead of building something from scratch, you go through and you understand and set up your own little cyber networks. And maybe even do some of your own pen testing on some open source technology and contribute back to those projects. It kind of depends a little bit about what field that you're in. But one of the things that I recommended to this student was, you know, hey, grab some old computers. Pretty much anything that's 2 or 3 years old, nobody's going to want anyway. It doesn't have any value. And set those up in your apartment or your dorm room and secure them. You know, put them up in a way and you can install Linux on them and set up different configurations. So you could set up your own, obviously your own firewall, but then you can have a VPN coming in. Maybe you set up some internal services that you try to block and maintain. And then you provide a way with through VPN for you to then log into your machines externally and just set the whole thing up. Pretend like it's a actual business network that you're hardening and set it, see if you can get that configuration set up well. And then maybe you challenge some of your colleagues to see if they can get in or give them access to certain pieces of information and see if there's any vulnerabilities that they can find. You know, this is a cheap way to do it. And there's also a lot of hands-on learning that you'll do just by having that type of a project. Another thing, if you don't have the hardware, you don't want to invest in even just getting the physical hardware because it takes up a lot of room. And you know, honestly, you can run into just nothing but trouble fighting hardware issues. But you can do a lot of the same types of things using virtualization. You can use VirtualBox, which is Oracle software. It allows you to set up a virtual machine. And most kids now in college, they're going to have laptops that can support virtualization. So that really shouldn't be a problem of having one or two VMs running on your laptop. But you can do the same type of a thing. You can set up different configurations. Now, the nice thing about using a virtualization platform like VirtualBox or VMware is that you can create snapshots. And before you make major changes. And then if anything bad happens, it's very easy to just roll those changes back to a known state. That way, if you're just messing around with things, you don't spend a lot of time trying to figure out what you did, what you broke, and then try to unbreak it. I know I've done that way too many times to count. But that's another way that you can do it. And even there, even if you could get a couple smaller desktop computers, you could virtualize them as well and then be able to have a little bit of a larger network. But you know, there's so much that you can learn by implementing these types of solutions. One of the things that we use over at our office is PFSense, a PFSense box instead of a Cisco router or other kind of a hardware router. And the PFSense is just an old box, just who knows what it even originated as. We threw a different hard drive in it, added an additional network card. And now we can create multiple wireless networks, different access points, and we can set up tunneling through our server over to other servers or from one office to another office. But then we can also implement an open VPN, so now employees can log in via VPN from home if they needed to get access to their local machine or any other resources. So setting something like that up and then documenting what you did is a great way to show what you can do as part of that work portfolio. And then the last piece of advice that I've gotten, again, this applies to pretty much everybody out there, is do your own research and education online. You know, yes, the college degrees are going to be great. They're going to focus very deep into some topic areas that are going to be relevant, but they're never going to be what the state of the art is. And they're never going to have the breadth which you can get from online education. One of the main ones, and I know I've talked about some of these in the past, like Udemy and code.org and things like that, if you're just getting started out on the software side. But one of the big sites is Pluralsight. Pluralsight.com, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes as well. But this one has a huge focus around cyber and security and malware and reverse engineering. And the thing about Pluralsight is that they've got a very, very high standard for videos. The audio must be perfect. The video must be perfect. The slides must be perfect. The entire presentation just has to be so well polished before they'll even publish it. So you end up getting just absolutely top quality education and presentations through Pluralsight. Of course, that comes at a cost. It's one of the more expensive platforms out there. But you know, when you think about it, you know, you're dropping 10, 20, 30 grand a year on college. Well, you know, what's $100 on a course that may actually teach you more in 12 hours than what you would get from an entire semester? So don't be too concerned about the price. You know, definitely do your research, find out, you know, don't take a course just to take it. If it's not something that's of interest, but if you can find ones that are both on target with what you want to do and are in the subject area that you want to learn more of, I wouldn't hesitate to go check those out. And Pluralsight's just one of many sites that's available. That just happens to be one that I've used in the past, and I've been very, very impressed with the quality of the courses that are being taught. So anyway, that was my advice to that college student, and that's also my advice to you. If you got any other thoughts, man, I'd love to hear it. You can leave those over on our Facebook page within the comments of this show, and I'll definitely share those out in a future episode if we get any comments. So the takeaways today are, you know, one, find yourself a mentor. And, you know, a lot of people get hung up on this whole mentorship. I don't mean you got to track somebody down and have a written agreement and you guys are going to be life partners for life. I mean, that's great if it works. But, you know, a mentor could also just be somebody that you have coffee with once a year, or maybe it's just once or twice ever. And, you know, you explain kind of what some of your goals are, and maybe they've got some of that life experience that they can pass on to you. And it doesn't need to be anything overly complicated or thought through. Maybe it's something that you just check in. And maybe there's somebody you check in every quarter or once a year, just, you know, life advice type thing. And, you know, you can find great mentors through your university. Wouldn't hesitate to reach out to any of your instructors. They'll have a pretty good idea of what your personality is and who maybe had recently graduated that might be a good mentor. And you can always reach out to me, too, if it's something where you think I might have some value. You know, the second one, I just mentioned this, too, which is go out and do some additional learning on your own. You know, I mentioned Pluralsight is one of those options, but you know, if you can't afford something like that, there's so many great resources available on YouTube that are completely free, and then there's a lot of other resources out there through different websites that might just be educating around one specific area. And you know, do obviously take into consideration who's teaching the material. I've seen a lot of, especially in the electronics world, as I've been kind of messing around a little bit more with circuits, I see a lot of stuff out there that's just not true. It just doesn't work. So you do have to take into consideration who is teaching that class. That's where I really like things like the Pluralsight or YouTube, because you've got some validation that, you know, yes, they're a thought leader in this particular space. But go learn something new from somebody else, from online resources, and especially focus it around areas that you find interesting, not just because it's part of your college path. And then the last takeaway, and I think this goes without saying, go read my book, Wired for Coding. Even if you're not in a computer science discipline, you know, a lot of the advice is good for anybody. And if you're in a tech field, it's especially good for you. I just think a lot of the information that I've got in there is just help everybody move forward in their career. even if it's just things like thinking ahead, thinking of where you want to be and getting your work portfolio set up and defined, getting yourself organized as a new and up and coming leader in that particular domain and field, and just having a plan. So many times in our lives, we just don't have a plan and we just kind of wing it, which is never a great way to be successful. So thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it. If you have any thoughts or comments, you can leave them over on our Facebook page. If you have not left a review on Apple, love it if you'd head over there and give us a big 5 stars. It makes a huge, huge difference. And as always, you can join that conversation on the Facebook page. We'll be available to answer any questions that you've got. Just search for Go Hack Something in Facebook. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, if you don't already, you can head over to gohacksomething.com, where you'll find links to all of the main podcast networks. Or you can just go ahead and search for Go Hack Something wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks, Go Hack Something, and go learn something.